sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. Patricia, a sexual authenticity coach and a Jersey girl turned Minnesotan, and I, Judy, a health educator, advocate, and podcaster, a lifelong Minnesota girl, get together and talk about sex. In all of its myriad of forms and flavors, we are going to pull topics out of our hats, grab items from the news, and take questions submitted by you, the listener. Because sex matter so much. Most of us can use a little help getting authentic with our sexual selves, and when we do, we all benefit. So we invite you to join us. Why? To remind us all, and perhaps better stated, help us know that sex matters. Period. Welcome to another episode of Sex Matters.
Period.
Woohoo! What? Yay!
So crazy.
Oh, I love it. All right. So today we're going to, this episode's kind of for the guys, but it's also very much for the ladies and anywhere in between, whether you have a prostate or know a prostate that you love. prostates, the theme today is prostates. So let's dive in. Well, let's start out with
a little story about how this kind of came up. My husband is 20 years older than me, and we go to a lot of doctor appointments. And older men tend to run into these prostate problems. And I find it interesting because the prostate on a man continues to grow through their entire life. So it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And there's just issues that happen along the way. So we're at the doctor's office, and my husband and I, we try and keep it really light. You know, we have a very active sex life, so it hasn't impeded us quite as bad as it impedes some. But I joke with the doctor all the time that my main job, my main objective is to keep him peeing and keep him coming. And those two things, these are really fundamental things around prostate. He has had prostate cancer a long time ago and had the little radioactive beads implanted. Mm. And now occasionally he has prostate problems where there's a flare up or something like that. But we're going to talk about how that impacts a person, how it impacts the man, how it impacts, because women don't have a prostate. The closest thing we have to a prostate is the skean gland, which is where the controversial squirt issue comes up for women.
Yes.
But it has no impact on our bladder control or anything like that. So it does not work exactly the same. However, so this is mainly a man issue, except in relationships where it can really impact the sex life of somebody who is dealing with it physically or psychologically.
Let's talk about So the prostate is a gland that actually surrounds the urethra. Mm-hmm. That's why it's impactful on urination and all of that stuff.
Right.
So, and it's interesting. What is it? Is it the prostate and earlobes that don't stop growing through people's lives?
And ear hair.
And ear hair.
I am constantly trimming his ear hair and nose hair. I don't know. Whatever.
Ah, the joys of getting older, isn't it fun?
Oh, real life stuff. This is what we talk about now, right?
That's for sure.
So, but yeah, the prostate is almost, it's almost like a balloon that's deflated. And there are times where it can get inflamed and therefore swells. And as it swells, it applies pressure on the tissues and pinches off important pathways. And those pathways are the urine flow, which impacts them going to the bathroom, which is the most common symptoms that bring a man into the doctors, interruption in flow, feeling like they have to go all the time, not being able to feel like they have the relief of an empty bladder, all of this pressure type stuff. But then it also pinches off blood flow to that area, which affects the erection. It affects the ability to maintain an erection. It affects the nerve sensation in that area because it's pinching off these important pathways all around this incredible sexual organ and your bladder and all of that sort of stuff, everything that works through the penis. So yeah, I can see where it's really a freaking frustrating thing for a guy to have to deal with. I can't imagine.
Right. Kind of like, well, how women deal with when they are pregnant and they have babies stepping on their bladders and they never feel like they, you know, they always feel like they have to go, have to go, have to go.
Yeah. And you know, that's not even, you know, that happens for a period of time, right. And it happens for a period of time to help prepare us for sleepless nights, you know, having to get up to pee 2-3 times a night because of pressure on the bladder is actually the amazing design of us going into motherhood so that we're already prepared for interrupted sleep. That's the way that it's been like passed down through many, many different like tribes and stuff. They talk about it as a preparation for the baby coming. Now with this, it's totally different because this is going to be the way they are for probably the rest of their life. This is not something that gets better without some major, you know, side effects. So if you address prostate health, oftentimes it leads to ED. If you address ED, it often causes prostate problems. So with aging, this is a very prevalent issue. Some of the other things, though, that can affect it is, of course, your age, but then there's genetics involved, obviously, you know, how our bodies are made and stuff, and our health, that all affects things. But if you have a predetermined gene that's going to make you have prostate problems or prostate cancer or whatever else, it's unavoidable. So have you looked into, I know we talked that we were going to talk about this today. Did you look into the different ways to treat it?
Not really. I ended up looking a little more at the diagrams and where it was. And then I was looking at some cancer stuff.
Oh, you're so scientific and teacher. You're such a teacher. Yes. And that's nice because I'm the flowy, crazy visionary about all the energy and the way it impacts your psyche and all this kind of jazz. And you've got the technology, the technical flow and all that kind of stuff down.
Well, and it's like understanding where it is and how it might feel. And you know, all of that, then the rest of it all makes sense. Then I can like empathize with the rest of the pieces. Right. And I remember my grandpa, I believe, had prostate cancer and he had it. They basically said, I think it was in his mid-80s. And the doctor said, this is so slow growing that if you live to be 110, then we'll worry about it. And my grandpa lived to be 99 and it wasn't an issue. So I just remember that was an interesting thing because I don't remember how old I was, but I was younger. And I remember hearing, you know, my grandpa had this cancer. So I was like, oh my gosh, you know, it's big, scary. So it was an interesting thing to think about as a kid. They're like, okay, they're saying that it's so slow growing. Like, how do they know? And, you know, can you trust that? And how does this whole thing work? Right. But it ended up to be apparently true. So
there are some very localized forms of cancer. I think, you know, more of what we're talking about with just aging men isn't even necessarily cancerous. I mean, that might be the reason you go to the doctor because you're thinking, oh my God, I have prostate cancer. But for the most part, it's benign prostatic hyperplasia, which just means that you have an enlarged prostate. It means that it's grown past the capacity that the tissues around it can support. So there are different ways to treat it. which are the normal things that you would hear about just about anything, is you can do the homeopathic way, which means you treat it at home. Of course, you should get diagnosed first, make sure that it's not cancerous, all that kind of stuff, and then try anti-inflammatory diet. You can try cutting out sweeteners, artificial sweeteners. You can try, artificial sweeteners, soda, taking out carbonation and fizzy pop. That's a big one.
Okay.
They said, and then there was another one. What was it? All of those dietary things for anti-inflammatory.
That was going to be my question, is the correlation of that kind of stuff. Is it basically just like any other inflammation, that if you were to be on an anti-inflammatory diet, that would probably help?
It might. And so, I mean, it's something to try. If it's one of these trial and error things, and there's no real way, like I could tell you from my own experience with my husband, that there's no real rhyme or reason to when he has a flare up, you know, when it decides, like, cause the first things I ask is, well, what did you change in your diet? You know, where's your weight at? Have you gained 10 pounds or something? You know what I mean? Like, I'm looking at the scientific causes first, because being that I worked with dogs for so long, the very first thing that you always do when there's some sort of new behavior or new thing evidence is you look at the medical stuff first, then you go to the other things that may be external factors. Mm-hmm. So I'm always going to the medical stuff first, or dietary, or stress, or whatever else. And we just really cannot pin down any particular thing that says this is the trigger. And that's what I'm finding in research as well, is that there really just isn't a particular food that flares him up, you know, as far as inflammation or too much fatty food or anything like that, because I've made him cut all that stuff out of his diet. So the things that can happen is if you're on a diabetic medication, if you're on heart medication, so like AFib and any kind of stroke protocol types of things, all of those medications can have side effects that lead to ED. And that's tough. And then when you have prostate problems on top of it, if you try to treat the prostate stuff, it affects these other things. The one of the other, I'm going to back up for a second. The homeopathic stuff is number one, trying the normal things to just kind of get rid of the inflammation. Exercise was another one. Oh, that's right. Okay, it came back to me. A homeopathic exercise. So, of course, you know, our bodies work better when they're healthy, when we're at our ideal weights, you know, when we're moving and keeping our blood flowing and all of our glands are processing and getting proper blood flow and things. Oftentimes, men have dad bods, which means they carry a lot of their weight in their lower half of their body. Mm-hmm. This adds extra stress and pressure to all of the tissue in this middle section of their body, including their sex organs, which causes heaviness in the bladder region, which causes heaviness in the prostate area. So by losing weight is a big one that you can try and reduce the amount of prostate problems you have.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then exercising your pelvic floor. Now we talked about Kegels before, haven't we?
We did. Yes.
And I talked about it for women mostly, mm-hmm. but this is where the Kegels come in for men, because by strengthening your pelvic floor, you're creating a web of muscles to help support and relieve pressure from different areas of your body that can help tremendously with prostate problems. So, in men, what do Kegels look like? Making your penis dance. So that flexing of the muscles tightening and releasing, like you have to pee, but you don't, like you're stopping your pee. You understand what that feels like now because it happens to you whether you want it to or not. But just doing that exercise of pretending like you're stopping the flow of urine is building the musculature in that cradle of your pelvic area to help support your prostate health.
Simple exercises we can do.
Yeah. I mean, a guy could even like, some guys who are like into cock and ball torture, they like tie things onto their cock and make them exercise like they're lifting weights with their penis, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, it's not necessarily good or bad. I'm not judging, but I'm just saying they probably have some pretty strong Kegel muscles in there if they're doing it right. It would be interesting to do a study to see if those people have prostate problems. But
yes. How much does the musculature really, how much does that really play? Yeah.
Right. So then we have the homeopathic ways. We have the medicinal ways to treat prostate issues. And then we have the other ways to treat. You want to know what they are?
Yes, I do. No, I know. I was, as you were saying that, I was just also thinking when you're talking about homeopathic ways and muscle relaxation, if you were to take something that's a muscle relaxer, would that also help?
Again, a muscle relaxer will work in the sense that it relaxes the muscles. But then if you already have a swollen.
Okay, then.
And it's relaxing.
Then it's making it heavy. Pressure. Right. Okay. Got it. All right. That was just
that
what
makes
came
sense. Mind. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Another homeopathic, they say cut out alcohol and don't drink before you go to bed because you're laying down and something about having a full bladder in bed while you're sleeping also doesn't help things move the way it should. It puts pressure in places that makes it.
So getting up and peeing is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Whether you like
it. If you hold it, you're just going to end up with a urinary tract infection.
Right. Okay.
There's also surgical. The surgical aspect to fix it, it's called a TURP.
Okay.
T-U-R-P. And there's like four different ways that they can go in. It's an invasive procedure. They go in and they either cut away tissue from your prostate to make it smaller. They may anchor it, you know, like pin it up inside, sort of like they do with bladder and mesh stuff, you know, like give it almost like a sling feel up inside there. They can put grooves in it to help alleviate some of the pressure so that as it swells, it's like the concrete expanding on the highway, that it has the grooves for heat and cold, you know, so they can slice grooves in your prostate. It all sounds very sexy, right? But the side effects of surgery, and this is why it's not done a whole lot, the side effects of surgery are almost always some form of erectile dysfunction.
Right. That was what I was going to ask. What are the results of that? And how does that go? Because you start messing around with things in there.
Yeah.
So there's an incentive, people, to
do some Kegels. Cut out the alcohol. Do what you got to do, right?
Right. Well, you know what's interesting? So I'm curious to know. And I hate to bring up this difference, but I had a health experience a few years ago that just brings this so to mind, and then conversations that followed. So I'd be curious to know when men get, you know, when it comes up as to how men should take care of themselves and the options that they have, and the surgery comes up, how quickly they tell them that erectile dysfunction is a potential result. You know, if that comes up quickly, like I'm betting that it does. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I've found consistently with my own health and with working with other people in their health is that women, when the results of a surgery, a medication, a procedure are going to interrupt a woman's sex life or her sex drive, that they don't necessarily mention that so much.
And it's not as big of a deal. It's not as big of a deal, but you know, you start messing with a man's junk,
And
so much of their identity is wrapped up in their
penis. Well, there are some women who I've worked with who have been very angry. Mm-hmm. There was a support group actually in the Twin Cities for a while regarding some of that, of women who didn't know some of the cancer treatments and things were going to have an effect. And they basically said, and because I had a conversation with a few of them, they said, if I might have made a different treatment choice if you would have told me this was going to happen, but the doctors like never mentioned it. So they found it out after it was too late. So that's always
a side effect. It's just the way it's going to be. And that's terrible.
Right. And that's so, and I know I had, like I said, I had a medical situation a couple summers ago, and the interruption or the possibility of sexual disruption was not mentioned. I like had to ask about it. Mm-hmm. And then I was talking to a guy that had something, and I honestly don't remember exactly what it was, but he said when he went to the doctor and the procedure that they potentially brought up as a solution, so that was the first thing out of the doctor's mouth, was that this could cause issues with your sex life. So I'm like, well, isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. It's interesting.
What it feels like is that women's sexuality is dismissed so much more than men's are. And I'd love to know if this plays out, but I hear, you know, I just in my experience with women, and I have less experience with men, but the ones that I have seem like they were told more quickly. So I just think it's an interesting thing that sometimes happens where women's sexuality is sort of pushed to the side and don't worry about that, you know, or we're not even going to tell you. And so you don't get a choice. Where men, you know, and I absolutely think you should disclose this. You should let men know this is the consequence of these things happening, or let, so they can make a decision, do their own research, find out what other options they have.
But here's the sad part. Let me just interject, because mm-hmm. a lot of times by the time men are having these issues, it usually happens in their late 40s, into their 50s, sometimes mid 50s to 60s, mm-hmm. they start to experience some of this erectile dysfunction stuff or some of this problem with urinating and things, and they put it off or they put it off. And truthfully, they're so disengaged sexually already that because men and women oftentimes after 40, the sex just gets less and less and less, mm-hmm. Because there isn't the focus on how do we keep this going? How do we make this work? Why isn't this a priority? Mm-hmm. That they're just like, oh, the plumbing's busted, so this is just the way it is. So many men have come into an acceptance area, or as soon as they hear the word ED or prostate, that they mentally shut off and feel like they're broken and this is just the way it is. So that's really what I want to challenge today, especially, is that that doesn't have to be the case. Mm-hmm. So some of the stuff that I have written down is how to have your partner be engaged as part of the treatment mm-hmm. for prostate problems and ED. Yeah. So,
letting your partner be engaged.
Yeah. I'm said, are you ready for some of that? Because there's going to be, okay, this is for the men mostly, but there's a lot that can be applied by the women. I'm going to give a lot of information here where women can get involved in their men's sexual health, supporting them emotionally, supporting them mentally, supporting them physically, and hopefully spiritually they grow together and are able to just have that transcendent sex that isn't necessarily always about penetration, mm-hmm. but they can still both be satisfied. So
There's a lot of things just in that whole piece of what you just said of that I think about when you're saying all of that. And I think about not only, you know, letting the woman be engaged and the woman allowing herself to be engaged, but for the man also to be open to that, to let, and I know you're going to talk about sort of the psychology piece of this too, but to find a way to communicate if things are not communicating, so she knows she's welcome and you can communicate when there's challenges. Because I think sometimes there is there's a lot of challenges in those communications. Maybe she wants to help, but feels weird or awkward, or he's feeling discomfort. So her reaction to that is to distance herself. And like you said, penis vagina sex. Oh my gosh. This is something that comes up as a topic often, that people just do not have sort of the other ideas about what sex can look like and how it can be when penis vagina sex is sort of either taken off the table or isn't available for a while. I just had a conversation with a guy who had a cast, and we were discussing how there's a lot more you can do, because he's like, oh, you know, sex isn't happening in my house because my cast. And it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And so I'm always, I hate when I have a roadblock in front of me. I'm always looking for the alternate path I don't like for things to stop me. It's always about overcoming or finding a different way to look at that or a different way to do that. So let me just, I'm going to get into something that's a little uncomfortable, and a lot of men may really just like clench their butt cheeks when I even mention it. So why don't we start with that? And that would be when you go to the doctor's office to bring this topic up, most men over 40 realize that when the doctor puts the glove on and breaks out the jelly, that there's something going in. Okay, so a finger is going to be inserted into the anus for the sake of feeling the tissue. And I'm on the camera here of our talk, and I'm massaging the inside of an anus with my finger. Anyway, it's something that gets done in order to have an understanding of where you're at. And most men just really feel yucky about this. One, when they go to the doctor, it's sometimes painful because it's already inflamed. Or two, anything going up there is considered gross, nasty, whatever. Or three, perhaps they really like it and they're having trouble with the identity crisis that a lot of men are like, gosh, if anything gets stuck up my ass, I must be gay. Mm-hmm. So I want to dispel all of that stuff. It's a medical procedure when you go to the doctor's office. Now, when you're at home and your girlfriend, partner, or wife is game,
or husband
wants to put on the glove and a little lube, or not even a glove if you're comfortable with that, and they want to go in there and massage the prostate, that's called milking the prostate. And by doing that massaging of the prostate in there, there's just like a little come hither thing that you can do with your finger once you're inside. Men are taught about doing this for women's G-spots regularly. You know, you insert a finger or two, and then it's a little come hither movement that you do with your fingers, and it stimulates the release of the fluid that's in the prostate, therefore relieving some of the pressure of the prostate, therefore taking the pressure off of the tissues and pathways around the prostate. It makes sense. One thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. It's not proven effective. However, there are some doctors, some homeopathics, some DOs, some pelvic floor physical therapists who will actually have people come in for prostate massage as part of their medical therapy to see if that works before going on to some other medication surgery option. So, but this is something that you can do with your partner at home and make it something sexy, make it part of your sexy time or whatever. It doesn't have to be a surgical procedure.
Well, and it feels good.
Yeah.
If there isn't an inflamed, right. And add that to an actual orgasm.
Right. Right. So there's that. That's one thing. The other thing is that as a partner, the taint, which is the skin between the penis and the anus. There's at the base of the testicles, the scrotum, there's the little seam that, you know, goes down the bag when it's all tight and everything, you see the seam. So if you're at the base of that with your first and second fingers and you create like a knuckle, a double pointed knuckle, and you rub your knuckles from the base of the scrotum down the taint or the perineum, that's the correct term, there are oodles and oodles and oodles of nerve endings there. And that section of their skin, men's skin, actually gets hard along with a penis when they're aroused. So it can be very, very stimulating to a man. It can help him to reach ejaculation by taking, you're moving the inflammation, you're changing the blood flow pattern by drawing attention to this area of nerve endings on the male body. So a lot of this is sensational. When we talk about being sensual, engaging all of the senses, we're taking some of the mental pressure off of the man to perform and making it more about the sensations in his body and being able to relax into the enjoyment of sex or the ability to have an erection or the engagement with his partner. So a woman with a man who has prostate problems or has erectile dysfunction needs to be engaged in the pleasure both ways. It has to come, it has to be all the way around, because otherwise he loses his sexual identity. Men with ED can have orgasms. Mm-hmm. It just takes a little more work.
And what do you mean by when you say come all the way around? Like, talk about that circle.
I'm talking about being, if as a woman, I'm going to speak from my own experience. If I want to be sexually engaged and have a sex life, and I'm committed to my partner, I'm committed to his pleasure as well as him being committed to my pleasure. That's the coming all the way around. So whatever that looks like, and that can change over your life, that can change depending on chapters of your life. Like for women, a lot of times it changes around pregnancy. You know, when we're pregnant, we may be a little more sensitive. We're more hormonal, different things feel different. There's the concern about the baby. There's the, it might not feel as good, or maybe it feels really great, but some changes have to happen. You can't lay on your belly. You can't,
right.
There's different things that have to be, you have to work around, and mainly in the form of a big belly. So on a man, when a man goes into this later phase of his life, we as women need to help make some adjustments in order to stay engaged in that full circle sexual pleasure. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. I wanted you to close the loop and make that clear.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because I get all excited talking about this stuff, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, it all makes so much sense. But see, part of here's, can I just, I'm going to do a little plug about sexual authenticity coaching, because this is where you come to terms with the fact that I'm a sexual being and he or she is a sexual being, and we come together for the sake of sexual pleasure, that it shouldn't be about hangups. It shouldn't be about fears. It shouldn't be about not having the confidence to do something like that or being grossed out by a body part. You know, if I'm going to be sticking my finger in my man's ass during sex, he better well make sure he's nice and clean. If that's what he wants me to do, that's an expectation. We set that expectation, and that's what happens. If he's not, if I pull my finger out and there's poo on my finger, well, guess what? Shit travels down your ass, and it just kind of, that's where it comes out. Stuff happens, but he had an amazing sexual experience. I was a part of it. I take the glove off, throw it away, wash my hands. He washes up, and we're good as gold until next time. Mm-hmm. It's over. It's done. It doesn't make me any less of a person. It doesn't make me gross. It doesn't make me, a deviant or anything like that. It just makes me part of my husband's sexual pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice to be a part of that and not have those things divided up.
Right.
And the discomfort there, right? And yeah. that, you know, that's a medical thing. Right, yeah. Exactly. And I think, you know, it to get to that place, I think sometimes is really, can be really new for people. Mm-hmm. And so it's yeah, that, like you said, that's where sexual authenticity coaching can come in, or at least, you know, having that conversation, not during sex.
Mm. Oh yes, that's really important.
not during sex, not when you're ramped up, but.
Yeah, not deer in the headlights, like, oh honey, do that now.
Right, really. Exactly.
So and then you can work up to it. You know, right. there's playing with the outside of it first, then you can, there's toys, there's prostate massagers that you can purchase. So if you're really skeeved out about the idea of massaging your lover's perineum or their prostate, there's other ways to do that, but you should still be supportive in that or a part of it or helping to get him there because he's still a sexual being.
Right.
As are you.
And that's where, you know, if he's uncomfortable, you know, that's where it's like, how do you cross those bridges? And how do you remind yourself that this is sort of just a part, this is a part of life. And,
yeah,
you know,
you're not broken. Now think about it. So we have this body that we have, and it's an amazing body, and it's gotten us through all kinds of things. And we've had, you know, if we're 60 years old, we've lived 60 years of life with blood and nerve endings and oxygen flowing through our body. It's natural. It's a natural process that this human body will start to break down. However, we still have our mind and we have our essence, our soul, our sexual identity that can't be taken away by the shell of a body. That's can be transmuted into just a mind thing, which is some of the other stuff that I have written down that we can look at. Sex without penetration. I mean, this is like mind blown stuff. This can happen and it's not that difficult to do, you know, and people just think sex is all penis vagina and that's not the case.
Right. Yeah, that's, you know, it's an interesting thing. I was just reading something that talked about the definition of sex in, like, I don't remember if it was 1926 or something like that. Maybe it was farther than that, but
I can't wait to hear.
It was, yeah, well, it was basically, you know, it was basically penis vagina sex between a man and a woman. I don't remember if it said husband and wife, but it definitely said man and woman. And it was very much, you know, really about that completed act, and that's it, yeah. Nothing else, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's such a narrow, we've come from a culture that has such a narrow mindset about what sex looks like, and some people are still there from the teachings that they've gotten or what we see on, you know, in the media or whatever, and some of that's getting a little bit better, but we have a long way to go. And yeah, and to understand what does sex mean? What does it mean to you? What does having sex mean to you? And what is that true to you? Or is that what you've learned? Right, exactly. Because it's always interesting when somebody says, when did you lose your virginity? And it's like, well, what do you define as virginity? You know what I mean?
No kidding. Right.
You know, so it's what then is a sex act? And how many people, I know we talked about this in college in some of my classes, of the people that got around having sex because penis-vagina sex was the only defined form of sex. So everything else just wasn't sex, right?
Right.
You know, no lesbian has ever
had sex with that woman.
Right. And that was actually a point that was brought up, was exactly that thing of, yeah. if I kind of doubt he's in that mindset, but who knows? I don't know what mindset is in, I guess. If that is sort of how he's divided out the world, because that's how the world was presented to him, he may not have been fully lying, right? So nobody asked him that in my recollection. Nobody said to Bill Clinton, You know, so what does sex mean to you? What does having sex mean to you? And because I think that's sometimes a bigger and a more interesting
qualifier.
Yeah, exactly. Because if he has some division of going, you know, no, I didn't do that with anybody else but Hillary because Hillary's my girl. Well, you know.
Your impersonation is great. Oh my gosh. So fun.
And that concludes part one of our prostate episode. Part two will definitely include quite a bit of stuff for everybody with or without a prostate. So we're going to talk more about what is sex and adult sex education and stripper slides and and lots of talk about sex that does not include penetration. So, and lots more beyond that. So please check that out next week. Visit sexmatterspodcast.com where you can ask a question, get on our email list, leave a review, and don't forget when you sign up for the email list, you get a PDF of daily positive sex affirmations. You can also check out our Patreon page from the sexmatterspodcast.com website. There's a few goodies on there as well for the folks who are part of our Patreon community. And thank you to our first Patreon subscriber. If you would like to join him in the fun, again, you can find our Patreon page through the Become a Patron button on the podcast website. You can connect with Patricia at her main website, which is thepowerexchange.co. There you can find out how to work with her privately, sign up for online courses, and see what else she's got going on. You'll find her on Facebook as well, and her book, Crossing the River Called Suffering, is also available on Amazon, and you can get right to that through the website as well. You can check out my weekly podcast at wellnessrenpodcast.com. That's wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can also subscribe on iTunes for both Sex Matters and the Wellness Renaissance podcast. And I want to give another shout out. If you're interested in learning more about Patricia and her background, go to the Wellness Renaissance podcast at wellnessrenpodcast.com and check out her episode number 68, where you're going to learn a little bit more about her background, history, and what it means to be a sexual authenticity coach. And also, I had the absolute pleasure of having a conversation with Emily Nagoski, the author of Come As You Are. It is a New York Times bestseller book, and that is found at episode 94 of the Wellness Renaissance podcast. You can also find Wellness Renaissance on Facebook and check out the website for all of the podcast topics. To leave you with a little prostate exam humor, a sure sign that you are getting a bad prostate exam is when you feel the doctor's hands on both of your shoulders. And the other is kind of a bad joke that comes from a list of one-liners about prostate exams. Could you write a note for my wife that says my head isn't up there? Anyway, bad joke. Caught me funny. All right, talk to you next week. Come back for part two.